KBOO.FM. Coming up next is Pacific Underground.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Thank you, KBOO members, for supporting this great station, and you can apply today to join our board of directors to help serve our community and put your gifts and talents to great use. The role played by our KBOO board of directors is essential. It's a great way to become part of the team that is guiding our daily work and representing the interests and visions of all our members. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm and fill out an application, or stop by the station to pick up a paper copy. The deadline to apply is April 16, 2018. We need folks who love KBOO and are committed to our community values. KBOO needs you. Apply today.
Chime in. Good morning. You're listening to Pacific Underground. I'm Jake Vermoss, and I'm here with Luann Algoso and Don Jones Redstone of the web series Gabby Smashes.
Hello.
Hello.
And I'm here with our producer Kanan also. Welcome.
Hey, everybody.
And so, in case you guys weren't there at the premiere at Portland State a few weeks ago. And if you weren't, what were you doing, you know, because everybody was there. No. Here to talk about a new woman of color produced show about the experiences working in Portland. I have an interesting background with this show, which I don't want to get into yet, but...
we're going to go there, though.
Yeah, we are. Totally are.
But, so if you could give people a sort of, like, brief overview of the character Gabby and the project, it's really interesting.
Should we introduce ourselves first, or...?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sure. My name is Luann Algoso. And I'm the creator and writer and star, I guess, of Gabby Antonio Smashes, the Imperialist, White Supremacist, Capitalist, Patriarchy.
My name is Don Jones Redstone. I'm a director. I'm the director of the show, writer, and partner with Luann in bringing the show to life. It's a 18-minute pilot that Luann has been working on for years now, and I came on board last May to help with the final phase of the making of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the show is about, it's a web series. So you can find it online at GabbySmashes.com. And it is about a, it focuses on the story of a Filipino-American woman named Gabby Antonio that works at a local nonprofit that focuses on supporting and empowering Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in Oregon. And it's about, she's like a new temporary community organizer at this organization. And it's about her like kind of going through working there and recognizing that you can do a lot of good work in the community and still kind of feel as though the restrictions of the nonprofit world can like be barriers to like doing good work.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because when I first got involved with the project, it had a more neutral name of nonprofit.
Yeah, it's a little different. Yeah.
Now, like the Gabby Smashes, the white supremacist, imperialist, what was it again?
Imperialist, white supremacist, capitalist, patriarchy.
Thank you. That's brilliant. I really like the sort of extension. It's taking up a lot more space. Mm-hmm. Could you go into a little bit of the reasoning of how that evolved?
Yeah, so nonprofit originally, yeah, so the web series was originally named Nonprofit because it was originally like kind of inspired by like comedies that are like The Office or Community or what else, Parks and Rec, that it's like the kind of slapstick like comedy sitcoms that you see out there that are about working at a place or attending a place. And so Nonprofit was kind of like that original name kind of like pulled from that same kind of genre. But as I started working with Don and like the story started to shift a lot more into also not just working in a nonprofit, but also being a person of color in the most, you know, the predominantly white, one of the whitest cities in America, we recognize that like the title doesn't quite fit where the story is now and what it's shaping out to be.
Yeah, title can really do a lot of work in placing you, you know, kind of like where it is. And so I think the new title really doesn't disguise its intentions as much as the old one. It really like sets up front what, you know, like what you're going to experience. And
yeah, like so that. It's more definitely more about like how Gabby has this mission and worldview that she brings to both her work life, but also to her experience like in Portland, like out in the world. And so in the pilot, you get to see her in those two settings. And we have a clip that we brought that kind of also illustrates a little bit about her her role in the community at the organization and her attempt to take on the world that requires a little bit of setup. I don't know if we can play that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think we have that queued up.
There's a little bit of setup.
31 wins. 31-0. So how did folks feel about this game?
I learned that we should start wars to fight for resources.
Yeah, start wars.
No, that wasn't the point.
Yes, we should protect our privilege by building walls to keep out the stupid people of Team 2.
Dum-dums.
That wasn't it either.
Come on, are you kidding me?
Seriously? No one asked you to come here and tell us that.
No, I get it. It's okay. You never played soccer in your country before? I play.
So, Jake, was that your voice in that clip? Are you in the background? I think I recognize your voice.
Yeah, I think I said, "This is ridiculous," or something like that.
It's your star moment.
Yeah. No,
folks. You do have a star turn doing the chicken dance right before that clip starts.
Oh, God.
So what's happening in
that
clip?
I hope people never see that clip of me doing the chicken dance.
Oh, they're going to.
So the start of that clip is Gabby is kind of conducting this training with a group of community members, and it's a soccer game, and it's supposed to simulate this kind of notion around like where power distribution, and like so there's there's two teams, and then one team has like a few members, like two members, and then the rest of the group is the other team, and so it's a lot of like how power is distributed and what it looks like when only a few people have power.
Team one is allowed to make all the rules, basically, with their two players, and the other team has to do everything the other team says. And it was one of the scenes that was in the script when I first read it that I just, like, was totally on board, because it was, like, funny, and it's what the whole show is about and the experience. And then, you know, at the end, you hear, like, you can't see it, but it's the white guy comes up and tries to teach everyone how he thinks soccer should be played, which is the perfect illustration of, like, what she was trying to show. So,
right. Yeah, and sorry. I'd like to say here that I was tricked into signing up as an extra, because I was told we were going to play pickup soccer, not this oppression soccer, which I didn't even know what oppression soccer was. And so you just explained it to me. So, like, for anybody, I wasn't sure on the term about, because I think the clip doesn't show that, oh, we're playing oppression soccer. Right. And that was the term, right, which I learned was a thing.
And we should mention that the pilot is online now, and you can actually view the clip that we're talking about. You can read the whole pilot at GabbySmashes.com.
They can view my star turn saying that's ridiculous.
And doing the chicken
and
dance.
Your chicken dance. Don't forget that.
I would like to forget it.
Not anytime soon. Not if we can help it.
You're so good at it.
We're going to have to do a remix of that.
Oh, God.
That's ridiculous.
I quit.
So, wait, who are the other people that are in that exercise? Are they, like, Gabby's white coworkers? Are they, like, other people of color that are, like, working alongside Gabby? What's going on there?
Yeah, they're Gabby's. It's community members that are Asian and Pacific Islander, mostly.
So part of Gabby's job is teaching this community class and helping them, like, you know, understand an organizing perspective, and this is the first activity we see with her and the community class.
It sounds like there's, like, a little bit of confusion, like, not everyone's, like, I guess woke or something. Like, everyone's like, wait, so we're supposed to dominate the other team? Right. Like, that's the goal, right? Imperialism.
Right. Yeah, the lesson definitely got misconstrued.
Yeah, and so I'd like to circle back a little bit to what Dawn was saying about reading the script, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you came to enter the project and came on board.
Yeah, so I think it was last May I met with Luann and Amy Nieto Cruz, who was the producer for the pilot, and I think initially I was just going to be kind of, like, offer some support. I have some experience directing. Direct a couple shorts and had success with that, and I think we knew each other through some other nonprofit work, because we've both worked in the nonprofit industry, and we just started talking, and I was just really impressed with all the work that Luann had done up to that point to, you know, start with this vision and a dream, you know, like, one person, and then, like, to set out to work on something you've never done before, and you know, taking acting classes and writing the pilot, and I'll let her tell more about her story. But I was just really pulled into, like, her vision, her passion, and also I had actually written a pilot for a nonprofit comedy that was called Feminist Nonprofit that I'd never done anything with, and this was also about the nonprofit world, because I think there's so much material there. And it just lined up that we would be able to work together. She invited me to come on board. And and so then later that summer, so we started writing. We just continuing to revise and strengthen, and shot it over the summer. And now we're out there in the world trying to figure out the next steps.
Yeah.
That's so great, because I remember the sort of, like, pitch trailer for the initial crowdfunding, the CrowdRose or whatever campaign. That didn't make it into the trailer, that was of Gabby's character talking to a white canvasser trying to get petitions and stuff, which was very, you know, also very funny, because I can't go downtown or anywhere without dodging these, you know, like, savior types and stuff. Mm-hmm. And how did, because I know it started much sooner than that. Could you talk a little bit about the sort of genesis of the idea, Luann?
Yeah, I've been working in nonprofits for a couple years now, and I started writing it towards the end of a job I had, and was feeling a lot of being exhausted and jaded, and needed an outlet to kind of express what I had been experiencing in a creative way. And so, I started writing a story, and had come out of conversations too with other nonprofit workers, community organizers, folks that are working in that kind of space and also wanting to see change in that, in that institution. And so that's kind of how it started. And through a lot of conversations, revisions, I even did a table reading in the earlier part of it. I had been working with friends that were filmmakers and friends that are writers, but no one actually in it as I had been, but a lot of support in general in the community. I went through this kind of 2.5 year phase of lots of revisions, and then that's when I met Don, and it kind of took off after that.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. One of the other extras with me was our Filipino friend Marilu Carrera, mm-hmm. and one of the speaking roles is Tony Tabora Roberts, mm-hmm. both actual community organizers, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. As well as some of the production assistants and mm-hmm. Producers mm-hmm. and stuff. So it seems like it was a real community effort to kind of get this done. Where did you get some of the actors? Because I know some of them were local from Portland, but did you also have an audition process to?
Yeah, we put out some calls for people to audition for us, and we had people applying from around the country, surprisingly. We hadn't anticipated that. And actually, one of our cast members, Claudia Yao, is from Chicago, and she flew in just for this, but we saw her audition and loved that. But everyone else is from Portland, and two of the folks, Samson and Tony, I knew, and we discussed and talked about and brought them, ended up bringing them on board, and they were a really good fit. Mm-hmm. And then
Billy was in the original proof of concept too.
Oh,
but okay. he auditioned again.
Yeah, he also auditioned, yeah.
And then Jonathan Miles, mm-hmm. I'd mm-hmm. known for and worked with him before, and mm-hmm. brought him on as the food cart owner.
Chef,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's people can see it if they watch the trailer, but there's a scene that figures into the end of the pilot about a problematic food truck. And can we say the name on the air? Probably Gooks.
Yeah, why not? All right.
Whatever.
You just did it. Anyway. Yeah.
Reclaiming.
Yes. Yeah. He thinks he's reclaiming the word. Yeah. It's
and
not
he's
a bad
as
word
a white man. Right. He thinks he's reclaiming the racial slur. Yeah. but again, you can watch the whole show. It's not just the trailer that's online. It's the whole pilot's mm-hmm. out there too. You can definitely check it out.
Can you talk a little bit more about who Gabby is and how you came up with the idea for this main character?
Yeah, Gabby is inspired by my experiences, but is also I think a combination of people that I know too, or who I love and aspire to be, all in one person. She's a spunky, kind of idealistic, very in inherently in all of her being, feels that she is doing really good work, and doesn't like to listen to what other people say is not the right, she doesn't, she refuses to believe that, especially when it comes to white people, that their word means anything.
She also watches a lot of corgi videos for self-care.
Yes, she does.
Is that inspired by real life?
Yes, it is. It is. I knew I had to put that in. Because I have a corgi named Atticus who also has an Instagram account who you can find.
Oh my gosh.
Atticus the corgi.
Instagram
handle?
Atticus the Corgi on Instagram. He actually has a pretty big following, so there you go. but yeah, I mean, I think we try to portray different methods of self-care, I guess, in the show. And I don't think you get too much of that when you think about, like, activism and organizing. So, yeah.
So this has been, like, a work that's, like, been a long time coming. When you were, like, going through the multi-year process of, like, bringing it from, like, cradle to where it is right now, did you encounter, like, any barriers that were, like, that spoke to, like, exactly why you're trying to make the show? Like, this is why Portland is so, like, makes you want to, like, tear your hair out.
I can think about that same experience with other projects I've worked on where a short that I made was about a woman experiencing discrimination, and I didn't know many other screenwriters, and two of the folks that I showed it to early on that had experiences with it were white men, and they both said, this doesn't happen. Like, this experience isn't real. And I was like, that's exactly why we're making the show. Like, it's just, I don't know if you had experiences specific to Gabby.
I think also the nonprofit community here is small and it's pretty tight knit. And so I think that there is, some kind of protective barrier around, like, if we can be made fun of or not, or if we can laugh about, like, the actual things that we do in that space. So I think there was a little bit of, like, being uncomfortable around making it a comedy. Because I think in general, too, when you talk to, like, organizers or activists, it's, like, it's serious stuff. I mean, all the work that we do is really hard, and it's a lot. So to make it into a comedy about that can be a little uncomfortable.
And sometimes, especially if you feel like you're being attacked by something in there, there's defensiveness. But, like, if you're one of the people out there doing the work, it's so heavy, sometimes you just have to laugh or have to find something to keep you going.
Right. And that's exactly why we also pursued this project in a lot of ways, because Don and I both have worked in nonprofits, and so we know firsthand, you know, what it means to, like, be in that kind of work.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was also made with a lot of affection, too. Like, obviously,
I could feel
We continue to work in the nonprofit world.
Right.
Like, we're a part of it, so we're making fun of ourselves.
Absolutely.
And we're participating. So.
Right.
Are there more episodes coming?
We hope so. We have a series Bible that basically lays out all the future episodes and season arc and, you know, all the characters. And we have submitted to a few festivals that are made for submitting just a pilot in the series Bible, so that you kind of say, like, here's the first one, and here's our big plan. You know, can you give us some money to continue to make more? So we'll see how we fare in those festivals. And then either way, the plan will be to raise more money and continue to put the show together. But we're working on bringing on more writers. We have more screenings coming up in San Francisco, Seattle, and New York. You can check the website to find out about those.
That's great.
Full speed ahead.
Yeah, so if you do get funding, is there potential for, like, killing off the chicken dance guy and maybe bringing you back as a different character?
We might just bring him back.
No.
At this rate.
You really hate me that much.
There's a plot line about a guy who loves the chicken dance, and he just, like, chicken dances across the screen. And,
all the
critical
scenes.
Moments.
Critical moments.
I'm leaving. You're going to have to finish this up, Kanan. I'm sorry.
So, wait, Jake, are you involved in this project, like, besides chicken dancing?
I was also involved in, I think there was a scene in the sort of, like, office set where the other extras and some of the, you know, named characters in Unapi
The name of the nonprofit.
The name of the nonprofit, or Unhappy, as Gabby incorrectly guesses on her first day, are like doing some Twister type game, and then we're all looking very awkward and uncomfortable, which is a lot like the oppression soccer scene. There's a lot of awkwardness. It really did feel like The Office, where like Gabby's was going to pull a sort of like gym turn at the camera and like roll her eyes or something like that. But
can you talk a little bit about like the storytelling style and like how you're I guess situating the audience into the story? Is it kind of like The Office, where like there are those like interviews where it's like, I can't believe this happened, like the person like breaking down the fourth wall, or like what? Yeah, and like kind of what inspired that? That approach, whatever approach it is that you took.
Yeah, I mean, so it is. It does follow a traditional sitcom format, even though we're only 18 minutes at this point. But it does have the kind of commentary style of like The Office or Parks and Rec, where currently it's only Gabby, but that'll probably expand in future episodes. But we do get additional insight and comedy from Gabby talking directly to the camera and telling us like what's really going on in that scene, or her thoughts. Something like that. It's a it's an interesting style that we see more and more in, I guess, in the sitcom world, even though really just the idea of like having a narrator is a very old idea. But we're excited about where that can go in the future as we have some of our regulars in the mix also giving their commentary. So.
All right. And could you talk a little bit about kind of how important it was for like representation, for like POC representation in the arts, and it's also like specifically women of color, because a lot of times in some of these social justice spaces, there are still some patriarchal attitudes and kind of silencing of sort of more marginalized folks within that marginalized community or whatever.
Such a big question. I mean, it's important. I think in general to both Don and I about centering women of color in this story, in this project, in all aspects of the project, honestly, from the casting to
crew,
to everyone that's really working on the project. It's a mostly women of color and women, just women in general, I guess.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there were any men involved.
Just the characters.
In the crew, yeah. I think it's all women, mostly women of color.
Yeah.
So maybe that was like 90% women of color.
Right. Yeah. So it was like extremely important to us to, because knowing that in the filmmaking world, there aren't that many opportunities, you know, for women to occupy space or to advance even.
And it's important that we are, one, like developing those kind of crews, like giving folks an opportunity to come up behind the camera as well. Because if we want our stories told, basically we have to tell them ourselves.
Right.
And so we're, you know, we're helping to foster the community here in Portland, and then also using those skills behind the camera to, you know, lift up stories of people that are just regularly underrepresented in the media.
Right.
Bam. Mic drop.
That was a good answer.
Mic drop.
I don't really have much to say after that. Can we wrap it up?
No. I know, right? Think we're good here?
No. So, I mean, we can also talk about like the actual making of it and how that went this past summer.
It was a two full days of filmmaking, and it was intense.
It was very hot.
It was very hot.
It was in the 90s.
And it was also during the time when the fires were happening.
Oh, this is back in August then?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So the air quality was terrible, like even more terrible than it already is. and it was, you know, it's an indie project, so the time is tight.
We were very ambitious in that we had a number of locations. We had a lot of extras, and we had to move very quickly. So we were only able to do, you know, a couple of takes for each scene in order to make our schedule. And
yeah, it was definitely a fast-moving vehicle. But that's one of the things that I think was part of the learning experience, is like trying to figure out like how to maximize our dollars for future. And I think if we don't, if we're able to get, you know, a larger amount of funding, we can continue to pursue some of these other plot lines that are outside of the office, like the food cart and others that you would see if you watch the pilot at GabbySmashes.com. but otherwise we might, you know, scale it down and try to stay more in the office and have a smaller world. But but either way, it was really fun to be on set with like the group of people that we had put together, and just like, you know, there's this feeling of like, yeah, we're doing something, we're making something all together. Everyone's like working hard and literally sweating.
Yeah.
It was definitely, it was a lot of fun. I mean, that's probably my favorite part of the making of the thing, is the actual production process. Because even though there's certainly a ton of work that goes into the pre-production and a ton of work that comes after everyone goes home, and it's just like looking at the footage and trying to piece everything together. But it's I mean, we're still working on it in some ways. We have an animation that's being worked on by a few students from PNCA that we'll be adding in soon. And
that's great. Yeah, and that's one thing that I remember from the sort of my brief experience with it, and which is my only experience with any filming process. I haven't really done a lot of work with that, is that like it didn't feel like work because it was so intentional and everybody was just you know, down with the mission and sort of having fun with it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, that was throughout the, yeah, what Don was saying, like the pre-production part, the after post-production part, were intense in their own ways and fun in their own ways. But the actual being on set was a lot of fun. I mean, also being, also knowing that like most sets are not predominantly women either, like that was also, because I've never been in I've never been in anything else, so I don't know what that would feel like. Being in a predominantly women of color space, majority of the time that entire weekend was pretty empowering in its own way.
Yeah,
and it's been interesting too, like in the post production process, and just thinking about, you know, like we had to revisit scenes. We're like, oh, we thought it was going to turn out this way and turn out this way. Like, just things are always different. It just happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard someone say like a film, that's more my, or I have more experience in film than web series to date, but that, you know, they say it gets made three times. There's like the pre-process, and then there's when you're in it in the moment, things change inevitably. You know, actors bring things to it, the locations, you know, we had problems with locations, we had people come in late, you know, they were just like the reality, it inevitably changes. And then in the post-production process, when you're putting it together, you're like, oh, but now it can change again, you know, like, is this, how can we make this even funnier? What do we need to change here? What do we need to cut completely? And then there's like this final phase where we're like talking about it and like seeing things that maybe we didn't see before. And but it also was just like really cool to be able to, you know, we could revisit like why we made it and what we wanted to come out whenever like someone challenged us or was like, well, what if you did it this way? And we're like, no, this is our perspective. Like we know why we put that scene in. It's important for this reason, and it's important to show. So it definitely makes a difference to have like two women of color being the decision makers.
Right. Because if somebody tries to teach you how to play soccer,
I know how to do that. Don't need to be here.
We've been there. We've been there, done that.
Exactly.
I mean, for better or for worse. I think we're still learning, and we're going to make mistakes, but those are ours to make. And
right. And we own them.
And learn from them.
Run
our path.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Pacific Underground on KBO 90.7. This is Jake Vermas here with Kanan, talking to Luann Elgoson and Don Jones-Redstone.
And along the lines that you were just talking about, did any of the process of making that pilot episode, like, do you think that's going to inform your decisions on making subsequent episodes, and like the direction you take in terms of the, I don't know, the editorial style and anything else?
I mean, just the part about like the being like maybe we were too ambitious, perhaps. Like, I mean, I guess we made a decision to like go big in terms of the locations and a number of people involved in the pilot. But so I think that's one thing we may just have to do differently for financial reasons.
Right.
I don't know. I think we're like still honing like Gabby's voice. I would say Gabby for Luann. Yeah. For Gabby. you know, there could be additional characters, but we have like mm-hmm. the series Bible has a you know, all the plot lines laid out, and we know that one of the major plot lines for the full season will revolve around how nonprofits have to compete against each other for mm-hmm. funding. And how there's something, yeah, I think there's something that's really ridiculous and funny.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to unpack about that.
Yes.
Luann mentioned something in an interview that I was reading about the nonprofit industrial complex, mm-hmm. which I think ties in a little bit about what Dawn was saying about competing for a slice of this foundation money or some of this money that comes mm-hmm. down. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're really interested. As Don and I are both from the nonprofit world, we're interested in kind of exploring more of this like idea of having to cater or
perform,
yes, to foundations and donors and all that. It can get in the way of achieving your mission. Or it can be part of your mission, I suppose, but it's an added layer to what you're kind of already doing. And there's a lot of, like, I think there's a wealth of stuff there to mine through. And we have, these ideas around how we're going to portray that also come from somewhat, like, real experiences in some ways.
I mean, we're definitely going to take it to a ridiculous level. Like, there's every comedy has like a level of absurdity, and like we're not like way out there, but mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. we're going to make fun of some things for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
We're going to punching up. I learned that phrase recently. Punching
term.
Up. Yeah.
So for folks that like are unfamiliar with the term nonprofit industrial complex, like, I think most people know about like the military industrial complex and like mm-hmm. the prison maybe mm-hmm. industrial complex, but even then maybe not that the latter. Could you explain more about like what that is and why it's framed that way? It makes it sound like nefarious. I thought nonprofits could do no harm. They don't make profit.
Well, I use the word nonprofit industrial complex because it describes the system that nonprofits operate within as still kind of conducting aspects of exploitation, whether they're direct or not. I mean, they're subtle in the ways that, like, you know,
there's a book called The Nonprofit Industrial Complex, and it talks about like how kind of exactly this, like how nonprofits have to compete against each other, against these, like, the people that have all the power, the big mm-hmm. big money, whether that's government or foundations or mm-hmm. whoever it is, and that together they kind of represent this like complex that mm-hmm. Is part of the system. And mm-hmm. when nonprofits have to compete against each other or, you know, change the work that they do, like, oh, you're going to give us some money if we do this. That's not exactly what we do, but maybe we'll do that now so we can get that money. And so who's really driving the mission of the organization at that point?
Right.
And mm-hmm. and if you're constantly having to fundraise, you don't necessarily have that power to say, no, we just want to do this thing. But if we want the big money, then we have to do your thing now too. And mm-hmm. That it's this system that kind of self-perpetuates.
Yes. Series of compromises and
right,
because coming into it, just been volunteering or, you know, working with nonprofits recently and not really having a lot of background with it, it was something I found really very, very strange, you know, with that the intentions and the mission can sometimes get muddled in the competition.
Yeah, no, resources. I mean, it's unfortunate. Like, that's the way that we have set up in our society to do good. And I have a lot of, I mean, obviously, again, we work in the nonprofit world, and I like being around fellow nonprofiteers who spend their days trying to make the world a better place. Like, there's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that. But the system that we have set up where you're having to be subject to the money. This is a flawed one and deserves to be made fun of.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you can love the people in it and still critique the system.
Right.
Because, I remember reading an excerpt from that book talking about how that came about as an industrial complex and be thought of as that way, mostly due to massive cuts in public funding for direct programs, you know, through the government, that were sort of shunted off into the private sector and these foundations that are usually, you know, really rich, you know, like heiresses and, you know, those kind of things. So so it's definitely something that not a lot of lay people know about, but it's good to bring a little bit more awareness. And so the trailer's only been out, you know, for a few weeks, and I was wondering if you had any feedback from, you know, people in the community about how it portrays, you know, Portland, because there was a line that I really like from Gabby in there where when they're walking down 82nd, which is basically, for people who don't know, 82nd, the J District in East Portland, is where a lot of displaced, you know, API members from the downtown Chinatown core had to move to due to gentrification, you know, starting in the 70s and accelerating towards now. I saw a Willamette Week article that, you know, praised it for a more accurate representation of like the real Portlandia. And I was wondering if you had any other, you know, feedback from folks.
Well, Lauren Terry wrote that article and I was blown away. Like we texted each other and we're like, that title.
Yeah.
That's like the ultimate reward. We're like, because we very intentionally were like, this is not Portlandia. We're showing parts of Portland that people aren't used to seeing. Mm-hmm. And that walk down 82nd was very deliberate. And some people don't even know about like, quote, that side of town. And it was only recently that I learned that it's actually the middle of Portland. Like if you look at, you know, the city layout, and I was like, wow, that's that was new to me even. So I think, you know, by highlighting that, we are getting feedback now that it was that people find it vital, that it is, in fact, a more realistic portrayal of the city than the other TV show that that people associate with Portland.
Yeah.
Which is not a surprise,
the one
name.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think the perception that Portlandia, the show, kind of portrayed as being Portland was obviously not completely accurate, and it was only a piece of what, and an embellished piece, really, of what Portland is supposed to look like. And so that was really intentional on our part with Gabby. Gabby Smashes the Show, to make it, just to expand what Portland looks like. And with the making of more episodes, we hope to, like, go to other parts of the city that are also not, you know, kind of captured in the public eye.
And so is there a fundraising sort of central place that you have for like fundraising? I know the initial rounds were on a certain website, but now that you've transitioned to having the pilot done and looking for new stuff, have you launched that yet? Is that something that you're gonna announce later on?
We have you can donate on gabbysmashes.com.
You can go to the website and donate, and that will definitely go toward helping us make future episodes. And we will ultimately be dependent on our community to help us, you know, show more of our community.
Is there like a drama piece that you're gonna like go work into it? Because I know that like with some comedy shows that I've followed in throughout, I don't know, the past like several years, there's been like a lot of episodes that are like comedy infused, and then there's like one that's like, whoa, that was kind of heavy. And it kind of like brings you back to center. Is there like do you plan on keeping it more like comedy centric, or do you want to like introduce like some like realism that like kind of brings a little bit more of like a heavy aspect into the show?
I think we can have realism in comedy, first of all. Like, I think that just because it's comedy, it's still ultimately a story. But so sorry, we just got something
just
in our
got a bulletin.
Oh, I forgot what I was saying, but
yeah.
Oh, just that
comedy.
Because it, yeah, just that it's even though it's comedy, it's still a story. We're still by telling a particular story, even if we make people laugh along the way, we're mm-hmm. highlighting an issue that can become a point of conversation that can, you know, change things or show things and. Yeah, further the discussion.
Mm-hmm. We do have a caller on the line. I'll put it to both of you if you want to like introduce that into this discussion or not. Do you feel like talking to a random member of the community?
Sure. I mean, I would just give the caveat that I don't think that we are experts in talking about the nonprofit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you want to talk about a web series, we can.
Right, right.
You know, we know a thing or two. But sure.
Yeah, I think we have Melody on the line. Maybe not. Psych. Well, Melody, if you want to call back,
that
maybe.
That was so good.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, and I also would add to that, like, I think the show will have definitely, and it already kind of exhibits in the pilot, like, heartfelt moments, too. And so, I mean, not necessarily heavy as you're asking about, but there are going to be those kind of, like, real, like, tender moments throughout the series, because Gabby, I think, is this, like, again, this idealistic person that, like, really wants to find her way in this world. And I think there are going to be moments throughout the whole thing where she's just like, oh, that's not how it is, but we still do it. We still do this work because we care or something.
Yeah, you know? There's, like, I mean, that was another decision that we talked about, like, oh, okay, you know, can we do we want to show this where it just is like maybe it's a little bit cheesy or like I don't know, but you know, we were like, no, we're a little bit cheesy, you know.
Yeah,
we have heart. Gabby has heart too, and we're not afraid to show that and make a character that's like that, even if you know, things tend to go wrong for her when she tries to do the right thing or push other people to do the right thing. But she definitely has this like heart of gold, and that's part of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, we were lucky that, because I know you're involved with several other projects right now, Dawn, and so, like, yeah, we're lucky that you were able to come in and wanted to sort of, like, help it grow and be part of that.
I feel lucky to be involved. Like, it's just, it's been this great thing, and Luann had so much, you know, at stake, the amount of, like, passion and time that she had put into it, so... just like seeing now, like how it's being received and where we can go together. It's I feel really grateful that she was like, "Hey, that's you want to do this thing?"
Yeah. You guys are a good team.
Yeah.
I was wondering, could before we close it out, could you talk a little bit about some of the other projects you have to promote, like some film projects that I saw?
Yeah. So I directed and co-wrote a short film called Sista and the Brotherhood that's about a black apprentice carpenter who faces discrimination on the job site, and she has to choose whether or not to stand up for herself or risk losing her job. We filmed it on the Selwood Bridge in 2016, and we won a bunch of awards all around the country, Best Oregon Short and Best Short Film overall at Portland International Film Festival in 2016. And that film has gone on, much to our surprise, my co-executive producer, Dr. Robert Hunt. We have been, you know, screening it and talking about it and using it as an educational tool within the construction industry to talk about culture change. And just recently, the Department of Labor, the U.S., the Federal Department of Labor purchased the film to use it as part of their educational work to help people understand what it's like for workers on the ground. And then We Have Our Ways is a short film that also just won Best Oregon Short Film at Portland International Film Festival this year. And we're just getting started on the festival circuit. And it's actually going to be screening in New York probably the same week that Gabby screens coming up. And it's going to be screening at PSU in May as well. So we have more coming, but lots of great collaborators in town, lots of great women of color-focused media.
That's great. Yeah, I one thing I remember from the set is that brought a lot of, never having worked in that before, but it seemed like you brought a lot of professionalism to, you know, the process and kept us all kind of going on the right track. And so, that was really neat.
Thank you. I mean, well, we had a great crew too. I mean, I, as director, I don't necessarily like I'm keeping it moving, but we had our assistant director Eileen Sheedy, who was the official barker, who
like kept people
she did the one that kept
yeah.
Oh, I remember her. Yeah.
Great. Okay, people.
Oh yeah.
You need somebody like that
director,
though.
Yes.
Yeah, you really do. And so before we end it, I was gonna play this Ruby Ibarra song that you close out the pilot to, which I'd heard some of her work before, but I feel like with this new one, it's like next level,
yeah.
Right? Could you talk a little bit about how you sort of got her to buy in on the project?
Yeah.
Because that was really neat.
Yeah.
And so for people who don't know, Ruby Ibarra, who is she?
Oh, yeah. Ruby Ibarra is a Filipino-American rapper based out of the Bay Area. I had briefly met her when I was back at my previous nonprofit job, because she had come to Portland to perform for that event, and but I had for this project we had been talking about it for a couple years now actually. The music director or music supervisor on the project, Scott Jung, who goes by Chops. I worked with him before a couple years ago before on his big project called Strength in Numbers, which is a compilation of like 30 Asian American hip hop musicians and artists did this big project with him, and it's it was great. He did like a crowdfunding campaign around it, and Ruby was on that project. And so they've just kept in touch over the years, and I heard her new album, Circa 91, and was in love with, I'm in love with all her music, but I love her that album a lot right now. And I asked Chops, I'm like, do you think she'd be into bringing that, like letting us use that song? And it was a little bit of back and forth communication because she's hard to get a hold of for obvious reasons. She was super down with letting us use it.
That's great, because I feel like the theme of that, a lot of her work, but that song especially, mm-hmm. is ties into the themes of femme empowerment and, mm-hmm. you know, woman of color representation in the arts, in, mm-hmm. you know, sort of our own sort of narratives, our personal mythologies. And so that was great that you were able to get it. And if people haven't seen the video yet, it's a really amazing video, mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, it was really cool. Luann has this knack for just like reaching out to anybody she wants and being like, hey, can you do this thing? And they're like, yeah. Like, oh my God. It's the song is amazing. And it's actually going to be featured in a new title sequence. It's an animated, just a little, you know, short little clip that will be in, it's not part of the pilot right now, but it will be, mm-hmm. maybe later this month. We're still adding things in as we go. Yeah, yeah. But it's to that song, and it's an animated Gabby / Luann, mm-hmm. Doing battle with the words,
oh my God.
Imperialist, capitalist, patriarchy.
Yes.
She actually is going to smash.
Yeah.
Stuff. With her fists or with like a hammer?
Anything she has. Yeah. Feet. Yeah. Fists. Yeah. It's really, we're grateful to some PNC students putting that together for us. But it's to that song. And it's, mm-hmm. it's so perfect. We're, mm-hmm. grateful to Ruby for letting us use it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so thanks again for coming in. It was great to chat with both of you. I feel like we'd do it for another hour, but we got to get kicked off the air soon. But what was the name of the website again? So people who don't...
GabbySmashes.com. Mm-hmm. Thank you All for right. having us.
Yeah. And if people want to follow you on the socials...
Yeah, we're on Facebook at Gabby Smashes Web Series, and Instagram and Twitter at Gabby Smashes.
All right. And so with Jake and Kanan and Dawn and Luann, you've been listening to Pacific Underground.
Thank and we're going to go out on that song.
Yo, flip up story arc if it don't involve no matriarch. Some mothers work from the ground up, they craft an air like ATR with the butterfly sleeves. Kaka Philippine dana, pag nagsalita mga panatay bala. Wag magtaka kung ako ay makatabulok na sistema. Kurakot sa pera, bagsak. But we putting our heart into darkness. They putting these pigs in the office. Oh, you thinking you
schooling, but you hella lost, cause you best get the boss while I top this. But look at my eye, that she moving so cold. Can't hold a candle to her when she glow. Flick at the wrist, but that elo she hold. Panagos that elo, she dripping in gold. We pulling up in a jeepney, all of my soldiers greet me. Hand me bandanas and pull back my hammer. It's warfare when you see me. Skin you alive for my country. I live and die for my country. I kill a pig in a white hooded suit on the low for my country. They got evil plans in the devil's hands, but I don't pray cause I organize. They got new ways to impose strength, but I teach mine how to mobilize. We don't fight for the money, for the greedy, for the white man. All we want is our freedom and the right to live on our motherland. Island woman rise, walang makakatigil. Brown, brown woman rise, alamin ang yung ugat. They got nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us. Island woman rise, walang makakatigil. Brown, brown woman rise, alamin ang yung ugat. They got nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us. Isang bagsak, goddess of guerrilla warfare in every lifetime. We don't take no shit except an oppressor's lifeline. If you step out of your line, I will protect what's mine. Kahit merong rosaryo, sino magliligtas sa'yo? Puro dugo, pungkut ulo, mulat sa dagat hanggang mundo. Reclaim it with ours, the high and the low. These women are gods, you already know. Roots deeper than water, they're running a village. The river runs red, you'll be dead in a minute. Like Nevis for nine, just have you beheaded. Fuck with my tribe, quickly regret it. Abaniko sa kamay, alisang mikropono sabay. At ang tapang ko, kaya nanginay. At halimaw nang sumasabay. Mga baran nyo lahat sablay. Mga rappers na puro bangkay. Tinamaan ko lahat patay. Kaya walang mag-iingay. I got that Filipino phenotype. Kayo mangi mestizo white. But give me that moreno like. That Rufio Aquino type. My lolas they be speaking like. Those Bali songs and bolo knife. I breathe the ether, need no hype. Two tongues are sharper with the mic. I need no end my history life. From a land where greed is weaving tight. They thieve until one piece of might. Just turn to see no see no light. Hacienda like Aquino right. Rodrigo vigilante type. They kill my titos left and right. With smoke and mirrors fill the night.
So let it be known, if you don't already, Pinays have always been part and parcel, if not imperative and critical to the struggle. Filipinas are no strangers to wielding our own power. Of all the privileges that exist in this world, none of which you may be a benefactor of, there is at least one you bear, and that is the privilege of having been born a Filipina. Your DNA contains building blocks made from the mud of over 500 years of resistance and survival, and when you are ready, sis, we'll be right here, right here, right here.
Island woman rise, walang makakatigil. Brown, brown woman rise, alamin ang yung ugat. They got nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us. Island woman rise, walang makakatigil. Brown, brown woman rise, alamin ang yung ugat. They got nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us. Isang bagsak.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, next at 10, it's Valley Views, and they visit the Corvallis-Benton County Public Library. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, a Radio Geekly tries to unpack the good versus evil dichotomy within the realm of geekdom. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. To keep informed and get involved, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Pugs Fest 2018 on Saturday, April 7th, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at Tabor Space in Portland. the third annual Pugs Fest is a full day of workshops. This year's theme is energy. Scheduled talks include Trees and Energy, Carbon, Conservation, and Comfort, Financial Freedom and Your Life Energy, Sparking Activism with Hip Hop and Spoken Word, and many, many more. KBOO listeners get a 20% discount with the code WELOVEKBOO, spelled with all capital letters. Again, that's PugsFest 2018 on Saturday, April 7th, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
For the month of April, KBOO Community Radio is proud to be the recipient of the Community Tap Program at Hopworks Urban Brewery. Hopworks is donating 1% of all pint sale proceeds at all three pub locations to KBOO. They have locations at Southeast 29th and Powell, at North Williams and Shaver in Portland, and on Southeast Mill Plain Boulevard in Vancouver, Washington. Thank you, Hopworks, for supporting your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 10 o'clock.
Hi, I'm Gail Holliday, coming to you from Corvallis, Oregon, in the bountiful Willamette Valley. Welcome to my show, Valley Views, a forum for sharing relevant topics relating to people and issues in the Willamette region. Okay. Hi, good morning, folks. Welcome to Valley Views, and I'd like to introduce my guest today. It is Ashley Chavez, the director of the Corvallis-Benton County Public Library. Good morning, Ashley.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, Ashley, how long have you been with the library?
Well, not that long, actually. I've been here since May 2017.
Mm-hmm. Very new.
Yeah, and new to Oregon, too.
Oh, okay. Where are you from? Do you mind?
Most recently, I lived in San Antonio, Texas for 3 years.
Oh, okay. Very good. I hear that's a very nice town. Don't they have the gondolas?
And the Riverwalk. Yes, yeah. It's beautiful.
Oh, very cool. Well, what do you...